I'm Jorgen Sundberg, and you're listening to Social Media Know-How, brought to you by the SM London Live Conference on the 11th of November. Early bird tickets are available now, and they're selling fast at socialmedialondon.co.uk. Now, what's social collaboration and learning all about? Let's find out. Right, so I'm here with James Tyer, who is the social collaboration lead at Kellogg Company, and he is actually an exiled Englishman. I think he's lived in Canada for no less than about 18 years now, and he is actually coming to us today from his home office in beautiful Vancouver. Welcome to the podcast, James.
Thanks.
Good to have you. Now, I wanted to talk social collaboration and learning, and the just to set the scene a little bit, could you tell us what your role entails and what your remit is?
Definitely, and I could start off just explaining my background's all in learning and development. And over the course of my career, I got more and more interested in how I could help people learn from each other through connection and networks than writing formal courses for them. Of course, there's always a need for the formal, but I got far more interested in the social and the informal. So I was employed by Kellogg a year ago to make a specific piece of social technology, in this case it's Microsoft's Yammer, successful at Kellogg. And I was given a very wide remit of go make it successful. It's a very new thing to Kellogg. It requires quite a change in company culture. And I was lucky enough to be hired under a group that is all about the future of IT at Kellogg. And it's been interesting as IT is not my background. But I've been learning a lot as well.
Right. And if we look at the whole subject of social collaboration and learning, why do companies need this? And what are some of the outcomes that the organizations are looking for?
Definitely. Well, lots of companies have pretty outdated business models. They tend to be structured very hierarchically, focus on command and control. You know, we're going back to Frederick Taylor and Ford and people who saw management making the decisions and everyone else doing the workers who are kind of cogs in the machine that just kind of did one thing. But as the world's got more complex and especially the amount of information that's available to everyone, companies are starting to realize that, well, how do we tap into this more networked way of thinking? If you're more networked, you can be more agile, you can respond to consumer demands, industry market demands, and employees. And it tends to be that if you focus on specifically the behaviors and culture that make social collaboration, and social is in quotes, collaboration has to be social, but that's, you know, the term that we use. You know, if you put these things in place, then you tend to have a more engaged workplace. It's more sort of community feeling. There's more transparency from leadership. There's more accountability as well. And that can lead to, you know, greater innovation as ideas are shared more freely and people have more ownership of those ideas. And of course, workers can be more productive because a lot of the politics and organizational process that gets in the way of their work slowly, you know, gets removed.
And that's some interesting outcomes. I imagine it's difficult to quantify the results and the return on investments.
Yeah, it is difficult, especially as companies are used to asking ROI. There are two parts to it. The first is you have to really believe that it's going to be the case. And I think most people are, you know, get the social piece at heart. They're like that at home. They're like that with their friends and their family and, you know, tend to see the success from, you know, social groups and things like that. But the ROI piece, you can get some numbers and you can bring it down to, you know, reduction in emails, for example. We all have, you know, hundreds and thousands a week. But if you could bring those down, you know, you've got some numbers that you can give. And, you know, you could start to step a bit further and say you could look at your employee engagement scores over time. And you could also look at, you know, your innovation pipeline. Are you getting more ideas? Are you getting better ideas? You know, there are a number of ways that you can quantify it as well.
Great. And if a company wants to implement this, what would be a good start? What would be a step-by-step approach?
Well, I think the first place that everyone has to do is do some kind of cultural assessment. We talk about the technology firms talk about the technology, but really, the technology firms might not like this too much, but all of it does the same thing. They do some bits better than others, but you're really dealing with the culture. So understand the culture. You know, how are employee connections made? What is leadership like? What is the command process like? How are decisions made? All of those kind of things. And once you get a good understanding of that, you can also probably have a really good understanding of how the business actually works. And I'm meaning both the formal way that people may think the business works and the more informal of how people are actually doing their job. And once you get that far, you can actually start finding use cases. And I find the way that you have to approach this is it's one conversation at a time. It's, maybe one person, it might be five people, but you just have a conversation about what do they find frustrating, what are they hoping to achieve, what are their business goals, and then see if you can find a way to use some of the technology to help that. Very importantly, you have to find some leadership engagement. For me, I'm getting there, and it takes a good amount of time for the ideas to permeate. So you have to be prepared that this isn't no instant win. This is a long-term change process that could complement, like a more official, like organizational development change process, or it could be something on its own that just sort of happens at a more grassroots level.
Right. Okay. So that's how to do it. How do you not do it? What are some of the pitfalls you see companies doing?
You see them a lot of the time, and I think sometimes it comes down to the sales process of the technology companies too, but a big bang doesn't work. So we're all used to decades of, here's a big new IT software launch, go use it, we'll give you lots of information about it, and that hasn't really taken off, or we had a big peak and then it just completely dropped off. This, as I said, is something about that takes a long time. It's lot of conversations. It's about behavior change, bringing new habits and culture change that result from that, new processes too. So no massive launch where you get everyone on it, and then pretty much what they do is go, I don't know what to use this for. Why are you giving this to me? And then it's twice as hard to get anyone back to trying it again. And the second one is if you don't have any leadership involvement, you're not going to get that culture of transparency and engagement that you would do if they're involved and active and modeling those behaviors that you want others to see. I mean, we spend a lot of money at organizations on leadership programs, and the same stuff is taught, over the last 20, 30 years, being accountable, being situational, being transparent, being authentic, those kind of things. But people come out of those programs and see that their peers or their superiors don't model the very same behaviors that they've been told to. So they don't. They learn the culture of the organization and how to be successful. So when it comes to this social collaboration technology and the culture that you want, you need to engage leadership early so you have some of those people at the top showing others what success looks like.
And in your experience, what leaders at what level are, what are they, the best people to approach first? And I guess in an ideal scenario, you'll get the CEO to be very socially collaborative. But realistically, where does it start?
Honestly, it's just through the conversations that you find them. You find those ones that happen to have a more informal feel in their departments. I was lucky enough that Yammer was already had already been started by someone else, and he'd done a good job of just getting it up and running for a couple of departments. And so I could start with them. And I like the idea of Trojan mice. I've forgotten the name of the person that that coined the term, but I learned of it through Ewan Semple, who used to be at the BBC. And the idea is rather than Trojan horse and you fit everything in this one big thing and you launch it into the organization and it explodes out, you just do it through conversations. You touch one person, they go touch the next person. I know Trojan mice makes you kind of think of the plague, and that's the idea, but it's a bit more positive than that.
Yeah, yeah. We'll look up who the originator is.
It is www.trojanmice.com, and I apologize to him for forgetting his name.
Okay. So I've got another term or phrase, which is working out loud. What's that all about, and how do you do it well?
Definitely. Well, a lot of what makes organizations and the culture of organizations the way they are the assumptions that we carry about what people are doing and what they're thinking and what they're working on. And especially being a remote worker, it's still hard to get out of that mindset of, oh, I've got to appear like I'm doing something. And, you know, everyone has that culture of busy that happens. So working out loud is a way of getting out of your head and into a place where other people can see what you're doing. Another way of calling it is narrating your work. And there's some great people that speak about it. I urge anyone listening to go look up John Stepper, Simon Terry, or Jane Bozarth, who has an awesome book called Show Your Work as well. And what they say is if you share what you're working on, whether it's in a draft or it's an idea, or if it's a photo, it could be anything, then others in your organization will see what you're doing and you can accomplish a number of things. First is a lot more ideas. People will share their ideas, they'll give you your feedback, all of those kind of things. So from there, you can get new products, new services, all that kind of stuff. You can avoid repeating the wheel. I know from Kellogg that when I've encouraged, I've hosted Working Out Loud Weeks, we've built some connections across the company where two people were doing the same thing, the same amount of effort and the same amount of work, and they were able to join together and stop doing that. So the idea is, once you've got used to sharing what you're working on, then it's adding the why as well. So you're adding that whole sort of accountability piece to it. So I'm doing this, and this is why I think I'm doing it. And being confident enough to know that people may disagree with you, they may not like it, or they may think it's the greatest thing ever, but it's actually just putting out what you're doing. And there are two ways of looking at it. One is you do it just internally. You might have a, you know, like Yammer or Jive, an internal social network. But also there are a lot of people that work out loud through external social media too. Twitter, Facebook, there's a Work Out Loud Week that happens, and you could just go to, I think it's workingoutloud.org or .com, but just Google it and you'll see. But that's the kind of idea behind it.
Sounds interesting. And also something else you've written about is intranet profiles, so employee profiles on a company intranet versus LinkedIn profiles. Which ones are better, in your opinion?
Oh, better. That's a more difficult question. It's a bit of a jump. But if I'm thinking that I'm working out loud, I'm putting some of what I'm doing internally, externally into my networks and hopefully bringing some value to them so people can learn from me just as I do from others. I think, you know, something like your LinkedIn profile, which is, you know, outward facing and internal facing, because anyone can go and see it. Why would you spend a lot of time completing an internal intranet profile when you can have a much more active, live LinkedIn profile or about me or blog site, or it doesn't have to be LinkedIn, of course. You know, why would you spend all this time with this internal only facing thing when there's something much more open and transparent for everyone to see?
And so how do you marry that up with running a software piece like Yammer versus using Twitter?
Can you just explain a little bit more what you mean there?
Yeah, so if we use LinkedIn profiles to perhaps raise our brand internally in a company or externally as well, why shouldn't employees then use Twitter to talk about their daily lives or at work instead of an internal network such as Jive or Yammer?
I think you've hit the nail on the head of what are the working out loud people and this more forward thinking of ways of working, like Harold Jarkey and John Husband. Exactly what we all say is ideally, you know, the boundary between the internal and the external should be much, much smaller than it is. There's very little that is actually, you know, intellectual property and those kind of things. And if you want a company to learn, then keeping everything internal is not the way to do it. But as companies are not used to sharing even internally, you start with the internal first, and then hopefully by people getting used to internal social, then you can start saying, well, did you know if you shared out in a, if you built yourself a very good Twitter network, you'll be learning far more by sharing there than you will be internally. And you want employees to understand the huge value that comes from having, you know, a wide variety of networks and being part of them. And the more that you're part of and active in, I believe, and, you know, like I said, this is something you have to believe, you will be more successful.
Yeah.
I think there actually was a study, and I can't remember where it's from, but it came out HBR or MIT Sloan a few weeks ago that said if an employee is a member of five or more social networks and active and bringing value, they tend to correlate with more success as an employee.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll find that as well. You also, you've written about social collaboration centers. Question is, how do you design such a thing? And also, how do you keep it alive and make sure it's a living network?
Definitely. So part of my role was to, you know, make Yammer a success. So in my mind, that's I need to take a step back and do the whole culture and business piece with the technology as the enabler of it. So for me, the old idea of having a, you know, X, whatever name is, center or center of excellence in an organization is a sort of ivory tower place where you go and tell other people what they can't do as opposed to what they can do and shut things down. And you know, it's pretty traditional. I don't see myself as anyone who's telling people what to do. I tend to view it as a network where I ask questions and I listen and I'll suggest ideas for them. Hopefully they think they're good ideas, but the idea is to find a whole network of people that think similarly to the way I do, and, you know, slowly you build it over time, and it becomes, and I want to give credit to the people at Juvie, Dion Hinchcliffe, who's another super interesting guy on Twitter. His book was one of the original ones I read on this, but you build a network of excellence, so no one owns it. And the value is what people put into it, including yourself. So that's how you ensure it's living. There's a whole piece of community management to this, or facilitation rather than management. And so seeing yourself as a network or a whole community of change enables you to really engage people a lot more, I think.
Okay. And we discussed a little bit about outside and inside learning in organizations. You talked about something you call bringing the outside in is passive. What do you mean with this?
Yeah, I should admit, as being a little flippant and trying to provoke a few people, but so many organizations are focused on paying external consultants to come in and tell them what they're doing wrong and what they should do, or you know, going to conferences and listening to things. Or bringing, you know, we must bring the outside in, so we must bring in articles that are externally and share them internally. But that's a very narrow way of thinking about what networks can bring your organization and success in them, especially if we're talking about working out loud, is you need to take your inside out as well. So rather than just accepting what consultants say, are you consulting, or not necessarily you have to be, you know, like your company as a consultant, but are you helping others do the same thing outside your company? Rather than going and listening to conferences, are you trying to speak at them and share what you're doing? And I think it's the difference between benchmarking yourself against others and being those benchmarks at which others want to measure themselves against. So if you take your insight out and share and be confident enough that people won't agree, that some people won't like it, but many, many people will, I think, you know, that just shows a completely different way of organizational learning.
Hmm. Okay. And I guess that ties in well with another phrase, which I found in one of your blog posts, I think, which is, if you don't practice social, you can't support it.
It's true. I mean, as you probably know, you're talking about social branding and all those kind of stuff. You couldn't go and suggest on others as to how they could do this unless you did it yourself. And I think there's quite a big culture in organizations of, oh, we'll get some social collaboration now. You guys go do it, but I'm not going to. And I think it's a habit that you have to develop yourself. So you have to work out, you know, where your sources of information are, how you make sense of them, And where should you share them? Like, where does it make the most value, and how do you make them valuable to others? And the framework that I think most people find useful, and I know I do ever since I took a course with him about 3 or 4 years ago, is Harold Jarkey's Personal Knowledge Mastery. I suggest anyone to go take a look at it. And it's very simple in concept, but it's how do you, you've got all these networks and you're building them slowly. How do you bring value to them? And once you've done it, then you can help others to do it. It's a bit like, lots of executive coaches who maybe have never been an executive. It's a bit of being able to put yourself in the shoes of the other in order to empathize and really help them, try something different.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. It makes total sense. I'm sometimes surprised when I see people in the digital marketing industry, heads of digital marketing or director of social media, and for big brands, but they're not actually very socially active themselves. I think
a lot of the marketing language about social also takes away from the personal habit of it as well. It makes it seem bigger than it actually needs to be.
Mm. Right. So if we look at technology, so you mentioned Jive and Yammer, for instance. What would be the best technology for social learning and collaboration, in your opinion?
I don't think any one technology is better than the other. It's the behaviors, like the habit building, the personal knowledge management, that really help. And it depends on where your industry is. It depends on where the people are. For me, I find Twitter is one of the most helpful for my learning networks. Although you have to remind yourself when you get into some of them that you're talking to people that probably think very similarly to you as you get into these networks. You want to have a diverse array of opinions if you can get them. So, Facebook might be great for something. The internal social networks at Yammer, Jive, I've forgotten all the others. There's so many now. All of them can work for your company. It depends on, are you a Microsoft company, a Google company, all those kind of things as well. It just all depends on what you're looking for, what you're trying to learn, and where those people are, and join them there. And one thing that I did when I was first trying to learn all of this was I tried setting up some things myself. So I created a Google Plus community, and we had a hangout with about 10 of us who were in this sort of internal social space before there was too much support for it. And we were our own support group. And we did it for about a year until my daughter was born. Then I ran out of time. But you have to build your own networks too. So it takes time to get into them and to show that you're valuable to them. And also, you have to meet the people where they are.
Yeah. And I think we did a Google Hangouts a few months ago, didn't we? Which that's a good technology. We use it internally here at Link Humans, and we also use Facebook groups, so the secret Facebook groups, which I think they're launching this Facebook at Work initiative, which I think could be interesting for Yammer and for Jive and all the internal networks.
Definitely. I think LinkedIn will be there pretty soon as well.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the groups have been around for a long time, but I think they're a little bit sluggish, the actual functionality of them.
Yeah.
We'll see how they develop. If we look at other companies, apart from the shining light of Kellogg Company, who else is doing interesting things in this social collaboration learning space?
And there are so many, and I have to say, Kellogg, we're right at the beginning, and I think it's exciting that there's so much potential there, and that there are some people with a vision of a different perspective and a different goal of where the company needs to go. I can't think of three specific examples at the top of my head. I'm really lucky living in Vancouver that Dan Pontefract at TELUS, which is a big telecoms company in North America, is someone who I get to share ideas with occasionally. I can't think of specifics. I'm a member of the Office 365 network, which is a sort of network of, it was Yammer users, and now as Microsoft turned it into a much bigger thing, it's a lot of others. And I've learned tons of stuff from people on there as well. Great examples from People like Melanie Hohertz, who I think has just gone to EY. The thing that I think is interesting, rather than specific examples, is all the companies that are successful start it small and slowly grow it, rather than starting big. So you don't have, like the entire organization is doing this and everyone's doing it together. It's, you know, we have 100 people working on this Yammer group on this thing, or we're using Jive and we have 10 people that are connected and got rid of email. I think it's all about the smaller techniques rather than the big things.
Okay. And if we look ahead, if we look at the social collaboration and learning crystal ball, what do you think will happen over the next 3 years?
Well, the one I see happening directly, because I have to use Yammer, is we seem to be going back to big enterprise suites again, as Microsoft pushes Office 365 and a lot of the HR systems and other systems, Salesforce and stuff, are trying to bring everything back into the one big thing again. And it's actually a shame, because I think it was David Weinberger that said that we want small things kind of loosely connected with people as those connections. So you can have a number of different networks, but it's all about the people. And as the technology gets more, you know, the sort of cognitive load that it places on you gets more. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and whether some of the smaller companies with specific offerings will actually get bigger traction. Analytics is going to be one. Internal social analytics, I think, are going to get bigger. And in the learning space, of course, learning analytics as well. We haven't talked too much about the formal learning space, but just because of where I sit. And I think just more good examples of what's happening. And especially, I think, through mobile as well. I think that's something that's not looked at hugely so far, even though most of us probably access all our social stuff on our phones these days.
Yeah, and I think everything is going mobile, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, and now before I ask the final question on where people can learn more about yourself, I'm sure everybody listening to this wants to know what your favorite cereal is.
It used to be Corn Flakes, but Kellogg actually also owns Kashi, so I don't think they're in the UK. I'm not sure. So Kashi are a company that Kellogg bought quite a few years ago, and their headquarters in San Diego, and they're very much part of the West Coast lifestyle that we have over here of organic, non-GMO, natural foods, and those kind of things. So that's the cereal that I tend to buy.
Okay, sounds good.
But of course, I grew up eating Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, which are called something else here, and I can never remember what. It's a bit like Frosted Flakes are Frosties in the UK.
Oh, are they? Okay. Yeah. I'm partial to Special K. I don't know why, but...
Special K is pretty good too, you're right.
The plain ones. Yeah.
Yep.
Not as sugary as Corn Flakes.
Exactly.
Right, finally, so where can people learn more about yourself? How can they connect with you and so on?
I love talking about this stuff, so I'm happy to connect over Twitter. I'm at Jim Bob Tyre. You can look at my blog, which is theworksocial.com, and also, of course, LinkedIn.
Yeah, you put a lot of blog posts up on LinkedIn as well. Great. Thank you so much for your time today, James.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for talking.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of Social Media Know-How. Now go forth and collaborate and learn socially. Get in touch with us by tweeting at LinkHumans or just ping us an email to info@LinkHumans. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.